All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome again to the Read Rothbard podcast. This is number 23. I know we keep going back and forth and whether we're going to count these things or not count them. And I think, fuck it, let's just count them. So this is number 23. I think we've got maybe some new listeners. We've been getting a little bit more traction. We've got some exciting announcements to let you guys know about. And the pressure's on, Robert. How you feeling, man?
I can't handle this pressure, dude. It's just too much. It's too much. Too much is going on. The people are actually listening to this now? This has started as you and me having a conversation, and now people are actually listening. I can't handle it, dude. No, it's exciting. It's great. Finally, we've been doing this for a while now, and we're finally on Google Play and iTunes, and it's like we grew up. We're like with the big boys, so you can like get on your phone and download all the episodes of the Read Rothbard podcast to your phone and listen to it like I do. That's how I usually listen to a podcast. So it's exciting.
Now, are you going to listen to our podcast, or are you talking about podcasts in general? Because the last time I checked with you, you hate the sound of your own voice, much like I hate the sound of my own voice. So are you going to listen to our own shows?
Not only do I hate my own voice, I especially hate my own voice chipmunk speed that you put it at. So, yeah, I probably will not listen to it, but I like the option of having it on my phone. You know, to be able to have it just be at my slightest whim, and to choose not to do it—that's pretty cool.
That's the ultimate in free market. It's readily available to me, yet I choose not.
That's right.
Man.
Well, because you know, we all have a certain amount of time with which to spend our lives, and you got to decide how to do it. And since I already live the podcast, it would be weird to me to go back and relive it. Maybe when I'm an old has-been, if I'm not already an old has-been.
Or I never was.
Right. Or I never will be. I can go back and relive my glory days of the Read Rothbard podcast when we had more than one listener. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, seeing it on iTunes and Google Play, like just in that format, it's all laid out and it looks so pro. It changes you. It feels a little bit more official. Now, I've been going back and forth in my own head over the past couple of weeks. Each time we're a day or two late to get to the show, and I'm like, do we want to keep doing this? You know, is this doing anything that's positive? Is it anyone ever going to listen? Does it matter? Are we even saying appropriate shit? Are we getting any better at doing it? All those questions. And now with it in these areas and with getting a little bit of feedback we've gotten, I almost feel like we have a, I don't want to say an obligation, but it's kicked up a notch in my desire to keep going.
Yeah, me too. All you need is a little encouragement, which is kind of strange in how we've, you know, there have been other libertarian, like anarchistic podcasts that seem to start and do really well, like the Peace and the Anarchy podcast, and then just disappear. And I understand that those people are, you know, the guy like moved away and that sort of thing. I wasn't able to do it, but I moved away and we're still able to find a way to do this. So I don't know.
Yeah. I remember listening to them and really enjoying the content, but not the delivery of their stuff. And if it's still out there, I encourage people to listen to it. And if there's a way to reach out to those guys and, hey, you know, show an example of us still doing it at distance, you know, it can still be done. I mean, modern technology is amazing. I mean, how we do the podcast is so bare bones, it's ridiculous. And I was looking, when we first started contemplating doing this, at all these trainings and different ways to do it and what equipment you need and what software you need and all this stuff. And it turns out that that's overcomplicating it big time. how we do it right now is mostly free, and mostly it's just you and me getting on the phone and talking.
Yeah, I mean, if you really got down to it, you're using some free software. You could maybe pay for the phone line, and where you were for a while there using free hosting. So, I mean, we're paying a little bit now, but it's so cheap to get into the game. And if you feel like you got a voice and you got some things to say and you could add to the ideas of freedom, I heartily encourage anyone and everyone to get out there and spread the message.
Yeah, that reminds me of a Mises quote. I put this in Tom Wood's group earlier today, and I'll quote it. It's real brief. Everyone carries a part of society on his shoulders. No one is relieved of his share of responsibility by others, and no one can find a safe way out for himself if society is sweeping towards destruction. Therefore, everyone, in his own interest, must thrust himself vigorously into the intellectual battle. None can stand aside with unconcern. The interest of everyone hangs on the result. Whether he chooses or not, every man is drawn into the great historical struggle, the decisive battle into which our epoch has plunged us. End quote. And that was Ludwig von Mises basically saying, you can't just stand by while these socialists, and you and I before the show were just talking about all the people we know who we'd never think of as socialists until we started educating ourselves on these things,
yeah.
How prevalent that thought is. And you got to correct them. I mean, in your own way, you know, you got to be a little bit delicate about it because it starts so many fights. It's crazy. But, you know, you can't just sit back and go, you know what? Things have been going pretty well for the past 200 years with the ever encroaching and increasing power of state, you know, state power. So I'll just sit back and do nothing. So,
yeah,
I mean, this is a small thing that we're doing. And, you know, I'll just throw this out there. If anyone listening has any interest, you know, give us some feedback. It can be to the email addresses we have. It's Daniel@ReedRothbard.com or Robert@ReedRothbard.com. And let us know if you're interested. And we'll do a maybe like a webinar where I'll screen share and show you all the things that we use to create the podcast. And it can be like a kickstart. If you listener have an idea of your own to start one, we'll show you the easiest, quickest, cheapest way that we have found to do one. And I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah. And we're doing it like the hard way. I mean, I'm calling in, you know, I'm hundreds of miles away. If you actually want to do a podcast, like a guy like Bill Burr, he could just turn on his iPhone or his, you know, smartphone and hit record. And there you go. There's your podcast. There's a little more to it when you get into the RSS feeds and submitting it to things like iTunes and things like that. But, I mean, as far as creating content, it's never been easier. You know, back in the day when you had to get, like, recording equipment, spend hundreds of dollars on recording equipment. You know, and if you have a co-host, it gets a little more complicated, but still, it's never been easier. So get into it.
Yeah, indeed.
And don't be discouraged. Don't be discouraged if it takes a little time to get any kind of feedback at all. You're probably better at it than we are. we've been kind of fumbling around in the dark, and we still are. So it's a constant learning experience.
Yeah, but we have learned some things, and so if there's any way that we can cut some of that out for you guys, we're happy to do it.
Yeah.
So in other exciting news before we get into the show, I don't even think we mentioned what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about Enemy of the State, the 1998 film with Will Smith and Gene Hackman. But a little bit more housekeeping. As Robert mentioned, we are now officially on Google Play Music and iTunes, so you can find us there. There's links on ReedRothbard.com, on our Facebook page. You can search it for us by name in both of those areas, and like Robert said, get it on your phone very easily. Also, our Patreon page, which is accessible via ReedRothbard.com/tipjar, is also linked from our Podomatic page. That was one of the upgrades that we got when we expanded our hosting plan. So if you do like the show and want to support us monetarily, you can do that through the Patreon links there, or you can search for us on Patreon. We've also got the Amazon links. We've got Liberty Classroom by Tom Woods. We're an affiliate for that. We're the readit4.me. So we got a bunch of different things available to, you know, to support us. So we would appreciate anything like that. We've also got a little bookstore that has all the Rothbard books listed. And those are basically just Amazon links that direct you back out to Amazon. So if you want a Rothbard book or just to start your shopping trip and buy anything else, we'll get a little bit of a kickback, you know. I think that's above board. It's not like an illicit mobster gambling style kickback, because that'll be another thing we talk about later today.
Yeah. All good stuff. All good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get into it,
indeed.
Daniel.
Do you want me to do it or you want to do it? You want to bring
you
up the...
Do it. Okay, so full disclosure here. I have seen the movie over the years a few times. This is a movie that came out in 1998, so we're talking 18 years ago. It was, in my opinion, ahead of its time with what it essentially, the main thrust of the movie is, showing this massive police state slash surveillance state. This is probably, what, like 7 years before I ever saw anything Alex Jones did. So, but let's get into it. Danny, go ahead. You go give us the, what is this movie about?
Yeah, so the brief synopsis is there's bill before Congress that is going to increase the surveillance capabilities of the NSA and other agencies of government. And there's a congressman who's vowing to fight against this bill passing. And so the one of the head guys at the agency tries to convince the congressman to support it and change his mind. And upon refusal, he whacks the guy. He makes it look like he had a heart attack. So he puts heart medication pills in his car and then rolls him in his car into the lake where he, you know, he's dead and he gets found and it looks like he died of natural causes. But unbeknownst to the guy who committed the murder, there's some nature preserve guy who's like watching the ducks or the geese and recording it, played by Jason Lee, who's a great actor. I love him in Mallrats and in My Name is Earl, who catches the murder on tape. And then he discovers that he's been found out and that the government's after him. And so there's all this like high-tech surveillance activity going on, and it's, you know, super fast paced, action packed stuff, to where he's trying to escape and he runs into a friend of his played by Will Smith, who went to school with him, and he passes off the tape unbeknownst to Will Smith, and then subsequently gets killed by a bus. And Will Smith, then not knowing he has the thing, starts getting noticed that he's getting surveilled. And certain things are happening that are like discrediting him, making him lose his job. He's not sure why. And things unfold and he discovers he has this tape and he runs into this Gene Hackman character who used to be a former NSA guy. Like he used to work at the Iran station in the 70s before the Iranian Revolution. And he's living sort of like off the grid underground. And he's aware of all the tactics that the surveillance state uses. And so he sort of helps the Will Smith character with how they're going to expose the criminality of the head of the security agency. And they also, you know, get found out because there's all this satellite imagery and there's all this ATM and in-store footage. And they have these ways to analyze it. Like when the tape gets passed on to Will Smith, they measure like from the tape, like, how his bag like bulges slightly differently, and they know the exact size and dimensions and weight of whatever got put into his bag, and they're like, well, that's got to be the tape, blah, blah, blah. So they start chasing him. And you know, there's a bunch more to it, but I think the gist of it is that the amount of surveillance that is available to the government as depicted in the film is my first exposure to that. And this is, like you said, well before I'd ever heard of Alex Jones, who talks about this kind of stuff all the time.
Yes, definitely. Honestly, I started listening to that guy back in like 2005, and it was actually quite a ways after, but I got into him due to his talks on like 9/11 and that sort of thing. But this is the sort of thing that he mentions a lot, and you know, he's like a paleo conservative. He wants the government to go back to, you know, the Constitution.
Like a reset, right?
Yeah, he wants a reset, and he wants somehow the government to limit itself. Now, he's also against, you know, obviously gun control and that sort of thing. And I don't, it doesn't, he never really seemed to, his method was, you know, vote in people like Ron Paul, which is fine. I mean, he was like Dr. No. He said no to pretty much everything. There's only one Dr. Paul. I mean, I guess there are some other people, you know, he spreads the message and you get more and more like-minded people in government all saying no to everything. I suppose that's some sort of a, I mean, that would be a better situation, certainly. And you guys, you could probably repeal a whole bunch of horrific laws. But it's still absolutely working within the system. It is joining the mafia and trying to convert the mafia into like a charity organization. So I always, you know, Alex Jones will point to some horrific thing the government's doing. And I'm like, yes, that's obviously terrible. But then his solution is always, you know, better government, less government. You know, less government is better government. I'm of the opinion that government is a cancer. And if you shrunk cancer down to the tiniest bit in your body, why not just cut out the rest? Why would you leave it there to grow back into this horrific monster again? Because that's what government does. All it does is grow and give benefits to some at the expense of others. All it does, every day they're making new laws, granting themselves new powers, expanding their scope and their size. That is the very nature of the beast. So to expect the nature of the beast to change just because you put in a certain number of quote unquote good people. I don't know. I think that is far more utopian than anything we've ever said.
No, I'd wholeheartedly agree. And I'm looking for it right now, but there's a meme that has a quote from Rothbard. And once I find it, I'll say it properly, but he basically says that giving the government the sole moral right to commit violence or initiate violence and then telling it to limit itself, so give the government all the guns and then say limit yourself, is truly the utopian idea.
Yeah.
You know, to think that they're not going to take advantage of that position of power that they're giving themselves. That's the utopian thing.
Right.
And to think that voluntary society can, you know, perform better through market transactions as compared to government intervention is utopian, is ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, the idea that anarchists are utopians, in a sense, but I would say statists are far, far more utopians, far greater utopians. They just don't realize it. About the movie, The Enemy of the State, I think The Enemy of the State, fantastic name for a podcast. If anybody wants to take that, and I looked that up and I couldn't find one called Enemy of the State Podcast. So, if you want to grab that for your new podcast name, do it, dude. That'd be fantastic. as far as the movie goes, I think that was my first experience to see Jack Black in a movie. He played one of the surveillance guys on the government side. It is truly terrifying, the apparatus. And this is, you know, 18 years ago. So imagine how much more the technology has advanced. If you talk to about a movie like Snowden, you'll see more of it. But even that, I would argue, is not all of what they have. But just the idea that at any given time, you are subject to any and all kinds of surveillance. Now, I would argue that when you are in public place, you don't necessarily have an expectation of privacy. But when you're in your own home, you're in your own bedroom, you're doing things online, you're absolutely have an expectation of privacy. And obviously it's not just them finding out information about you, but the idea that they could use any of that information at any given time to destroy you. Because the average person commits, what is it, a couple of felonies every day, whether they realize it or not.
So yeah, I think the argument is like a dozen.
So, yeah, so it's not that, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't have anything to worry about. Wrong. You're absolutely wrong. They could find anything to destroy. Just look at all the garbage that they're pulling up from decades ago about Donald Trump. They're scrutinizing things he said years and years and years and decades ago and taking things out of context, and I'm no fan of Donald Trump at all. But they will find anything to dig up and throw in any kind of negative light. And this is like benign way of doing things. This is just trashing a guy in the media. This is just a trashing a guy who's trying to run for president. This isn't, you know, they're not going to throw him in jail or anything. I'm sure there's any number of things they could find that would be quote-unquote illegal that they could throw the book at him for. So there sure as shit is for Hillary Clinton. And there's obvious collusion going on to prevent those things from going forward. That's come out. Like, the FBI is all pissed off about their being told to back off from all the her criminality. And that's just, you know, government laws, not to mention all the legal murders that she's been essentially responsible for.
Yeah, you know, in that kind of climate, I wonder if the Enemy of the State film, where there's, you know, video of this guy and it's kind of fuzzy, but it appears that he's killing the guy, whether anyone would even care today. I mean, because, like, there's all this shit that is, like, in-your-face, blatant criminality on the Democratic side, on Hillary's side. And I guess, you know, some questionable things that Trump has said and possibly done. But it's almost as if it's so partisan that people are only going to care on the one side. You know, only one side of the population is going to give a shit and scream about it, and the other half is going to be like, oh, no, it's totally fine. Like, an example is the corruption and voter fraud allegations in the tape by James O'Keefe. Have you seen these recently? They've been coming out the last couple of days. There's they plan to have a new one every day up until the election.
Yeah, these are the plants that they've been using at Donald Trump rallies to discredit his supporters.
Yeah, so these are people who have joined the Democratic machine and gotten some of the leadership to say what their plans are to incite violence at Trump rallies, to hire the homeless or mentally ill, bus them to different areas to cause trouble, to pick fights, to initiate violence or to get people to react to them. But then they also openly talk about on these surveillance tapes plans to, like, not bus people into areas to vote, but because that would draw too much attention, but to have them drive in personal vehicles or rental cars or whatever so that they can have plausible deniability that, you know, that it was a coordinated effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these, like, voter fraud, like, things. And, you know, I don't agree with any of that shit. I think voting should be considered a violent act, personally.
Right.
But these are the rules that they have claimed they're going to play by, and they are openly seeking ways to get around them best as possible to not get caught in criminality.
Right. They're using these agent provocateurs in secret, and they are openly breaking their own rules, but it's completely ignored by the left because Hillary Clinton's doing it. So Donald
right.
Trump is getting in trouble for saying things, and Hillary Clinton is obviously not getting in trouble for the horrific things she's actually done. So words are worse than actual actions. You know, all
right.
The horrific murders and violence that Bill Clinton did, that Obama has done, that's all fine. You know, we're worried about this guy who's actually said a few things.
Yeah, and it's not as if Hillary hasn't said terrible things. I did see a comparison video where they show Donald saying, you know, like something about Mexicans, they're sending their worst people over who commit crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone's supposed to be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's of course racist. But then they cut to Hillary saying basically the same fucking thing, like, you know, 1994 or something like that, you know, and they do it five or six different things where the exact same thing is said, but now it's an outrage that Trump said it where Clinton said it before. And it's the same words, essentially, the same sentiment, same meaning. And it's totally written off. Like no one gives a shit.
Yeah, because the media is in full-on elect Hillary Clinton mode. Full-on.
Yeah.
It's not even close. It is
so
quite
blatant.
Hilarious. Yeah, it's super blatant. And then Trump kind of calls out the media on it and says that this whole thing has been kind of rigged. And then they trash him for saying that. it's funny. It's
yeah,
really funny.
Obama told him to stop whining.
Yeah.
And, you know, focus on the issues or whatever, but... Yeah, who knows what the issues are anymore? I mean, every politician flip-flops 19 times until they get elected, and then nobody remembers what they said anyway. So, they know, you know, it doesn't even matter. But it's just kind of ridiculous that everyone is on the Hillary bandwagon as far as the media and the other politicians, totally providing cover for her. But, you know, I go around, you know, we drive around in the town and whatnot, and all I see are Trump signs. Some Bernie signs still, and one or two Hillary signs. I actually see more Gary Johnson signs than Hillary signs, and I'm in a pretty liberal area, which is kind of weird. And so to, I don't know, it's bizarre because you'd think that there'd be more open support, more signs, more bumper stickers for Hillary if people actually wanted to vote for her or cared about her.
Right.
And yet I see more Trump things, and I see vandalism of the Trump signs. Like some of them get burned, some of them get graffitied on, some of them get torn out, and I see new ones getting, you know, replaced, but I still see them out there. And so these are people whose private property is being attacked who are still putting things out there. Yet on the other side, I hardly see anyone putting any Hillary stuff out there, and no one would really mess with that stuff anyway. And so it's still not there. It's just kind of a weird thing to see.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird thing to see. It's kind of a weird thing to see the violence of the left openly. Where they see, you know, it's kind of like this SJW crowd where they think that they can attack other people, and if they fight back, it's they're terrible people. You see it in the violent attacks on the people at the, like, a Donald Trump speaking events. I don't know if you've seen those videos where people will be coming out of a Trump rally and they're surrounded by protesters, you know, claiming that Trump is the devil and whatever. And I'm not defending the guy. The guy's horrible. But it's blatant hypocrisy because they'll attack people. Like, literally, like they'll go up and punch them in the face and scream at them, you know, why are you supporting this guy, blah, blah, blah. He's a misogynist and he's a racist. And if you support him, you're obviously a misogynist and a racist too. And, you know, it's kind of showing the hypocritical left for what they actually are, because the hypocritical left, they are all about violently imposing their will on other people. And it's actually kind of refreshing to see them come out and actually punch people, because you're like, well, yeah, I mean, what's a thug going to do? Thug's going to thug, man.
Yeah. You know, they always say, like, every election is the most important election, blah, 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 but this one does seem to be different in a way to me. And I don't know if it's because of my newfound thinking or if it's actually different. You know, because back in 2008, I was like all about, oh, McCain's terrible and Obama seems like a decent guy. And there was this big euphoria about him winning and like everyone in town was super excited about it.
I remember videos of black people just crying. Being like, all my life, all my troubles are going away. Good times are coming.
Oh, yeah.
Just like happy times are here again. That's, all my problems are going away. And I remember at the time going, really? Really? But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I guess what I was trying to say and my point was that one felt like it was in like culturally like a shift, like it was a social event.
Yeah.
But it's hollow. You know, definitely hollow looking back at it. And the next time that an election came around, and I was actually a fan of Ron Paul during that election cycle in 2008, And I mentioned his name to some of my friends who are all super pro Obama. And they were like, oh, yeah, that Ron Paul guy, he says some good things, but he's crazy. Like, some of his ideas are crazy. And I look back now and I'm like, yeah, they didn't go far enough.
Well, that was really the first time, right? I mean, he'd been in Congress for decades, I want to say. But that was his first presidential run. So that was really probably the first time anybody on a national level had really been exposed to those ideas outside of, like, economic circles.
Well, he ran on the Libertarian Party. He ran Libertarian Party in, I think, 84, maybe 88. I don't recall.
But were those people getting in the debates at all? I can't imagine.
Oh, no.
Right. So when Paul ran on the Republican ticket, he was actually in the Republican debates. And that was actually some serious exposure. He was on TV for the first time, really, other than, you know, CNN or what's that network where it's just like the oligarchs talking?
Oh, C-SPAN?
C-SPAN, there you go. Yeah, outside of C-SPAN, that was like his real, where, you know, nobody watches that crap anyway. That was his first real exposure, as far as I know. I know that's the first time I ever saw him. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think that his running, though I don't agree with politics in general, but I think I credit him with bringing out these ideas and starting the evolution of my own thinking. And so I'm kind of torn on it. We've talked about this before. Like, do we look at what he's done as still, because it's political and because it's involving voting, still as an immoral, evil thing? Or is, I guess, the ultimate result of what he's done, which is reignite thoughts of libertarian thinking and Austrian economics, make up for that?
Right. And I would, yeah.
Because I wouldn't be here today without him.
Right. No, I think he's done far more good than bad. He is like dipping your toe in to the world of libertarianism, anarchism, you know, which kind of all sheds all the more light on how horrific and terrible and nothing, how he's just a nothing candidate, how Gary Johnson is just a nothing. He's not there inject the idea. He knows he's not going to win. And he doesn't even inject, like, freedom, ideas of freedom, really. If you see him talk, he mostly puts his own foot in his mouth most of the time. He doesn't really just harp on the issues. He's not even as good about war as Jill Stein, which is ridiculous. You're the libertarian candidate. How can Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, be out being better on foreign policy than you are? Are you kidding? That is embarrassing. He should just be there. I mean, I hate to say that he should just be like Ron Paul, but he should just be like Ron Paul. Honestly, he's what's he there for?
Yeah, I don't even know. He's trying to play that middle ground between social liberals and fiscal conservatives. You know, he's trying to be that middle. Like, oh, I'm a little bit of this and I'm a little bit of that. So if you don't want to go full retard that way or full retard this way, I'm your guy.
Right. Which is like saying, yeah, I'm not principled. I've just, yeah, it's real bad. And then you saw the Ron Paul interview where they were asking him about who he supports for president, who he's going to vote for or whatever. Where he said, I'm not going to vote for Gary Johnson. I support him, I suppose, if he was an actual libertarian and if he could drop Bill Weld from the ticket. So that was straight on. And then he talked about how good Jill Stein's foreign policy was. And he said how terrible Trump was and how terrible Clinton was. I mean, he's on point. He's not wrong.
Yeah, you know, I always felt like he's had to, like, tread the line pretty closely, and maybe less so now because he's no longer in office. Because you can't really say, well, yeah, if I'm elected, I'm going to dismantle this motherfucker.
Right.
And you know, be taken credibly because, you know, like we've said, most people think a state is necessary, even if it's a necessary evil. They think that we're all, you know, criminals waiting to happen or Neanderthal animals who would just tear each other apart, survival of the fittest.
Right, and the idea that and then I would counter with the idea that you could have this powerful apparatus and only elect people who didn't want power into those positions is absolutely utopian. That is some sort of fantasy land, fairy tale, rainbows and unicorns thinking right there. That we're going to have this powerful apparatus and we're only going to get the good people in. Are you kidding me? Are you telling me that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are the two best candidates? They're the two best people that could possibly run this country and do good things, as if government was any kind of mechanism for doing good. But in the status mindset, that's what they believe. It's beyond utopian to think that this is the best we could do.
Right, but beyond that, all they do is complain about the state of the world and how terrible things are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're so dissatisfied with how things are, yet they don't think beyond the ideas that government are the only way to achieve a solution, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're dissatisfied with the world, which you should be. But then, yeah, the solution is always more violence or some form of government. Be it more government or less government. But still, you need government for some reason. You got to have that carjacker.
Yeah.
Who would jack all the cars? We don't know. Just protect us from the carjackers.
Yeah, so back to the point I think I was trying to make 10 minutes ago. I do feel like this election truly is a shift in, you know, they always say every election is the most important. I do feel like this one's finally a shift in that we have two very deplorable candidates, and I use that word advisedly.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think, as Jeff Dice, the president of the Mises Institute, had said sometime in the spring, that it'll be enough of a circus and a farce for people to finally realize how fraudulent, how screwed up the whole system is to begin with, and maybe start looking in other directions. Not everyone, but maybe a few more people.
But sorry to break you off here just a second. Just to kind of douse water on that a little bit, is the massive number of Bernie supporters who swore up and down that they would never support Hillary and then immediately went and supported Hillary.
Yeah, but a lot of them are citing that there was, you know, fraudulent activity. It's pretty well documented in the email leak that the DNC was colluding against Bernie. And so I think a lot of those people will feel burned by that whole process. And so their confidence in the system is shaken. I think that people on the Trump camp are starting to see similar nefarious shit happen. And so their confidence in the system is going to be shaken if he doesn't win.
Oh, I hope so. How could you not? How could you not look at the mainstream media and go, they are in a full court press to destroy Donald Trump. He is obviously what they are afraid of.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, totally rigged against the guy. I mean, and I'm not even for the guy, but how could you not see that unless you're like some sort of a blind Hillary Clinton supporter?
And most of those people are just voting for her because she has a vagina, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for them, but it sure seems that there are a certain number of people who just want to vote for the first female president.
Well, remember, if you didn't vote for Obama, you were a racist, right?
Right.
That was the thing way back when. And now if you don't vote for Hillary, you're a misogynist, sexist, patriarchy,
right,
asshole, whatever.
Yep. Even though
unless
like
you see through it.
She's like a... some sort of a alien lizard creature. I mean, if there's ever an argument for human beings being ruled by like real lizard people, I think she's some really good evidence for that. I thought that those people were full of shit back when they were talking about the draconians.
The David Icke stuff?
Yeah, the David Icke draconians. But if there's anybody who says that Hillary Clinton's like a human being, I'm not exactly 100% sure she's even human. I think that she might have either some reptilian parts of her, or she's some sort of a weird puppet creature that they kind of just like move the levers. I don't know. She doesn't
like
seem
like
a human being to me.
So like she's like Chewbacca or an Ewok or a Jim Henson's Muppet type thing.
She is definitely a Muppet. She is like some sort
latest
of
latest in animatronic technology.
Yes. She might be replaced. by an actual Android at some point, and I don't think anybody would notice.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, hey, let's loop this back to Enemy of the State a little bit, because there's a few things on the Wikipedia page, and I'll post that down below, that I think were kind of interesting.
Okay.
So let me find it real quick. So one of the critics, his name is Edvins Batix from the San Francisco Examiner. He says he praised the movie's developmental aspects, but criticized the overall concept that drove the film from the beginning because the efficiency of government intelligence was unrealistic. Like, he thought that the portrayal of being able to track your movements and see you from satellites and tap into ATM cameras and all this stuff was too unrealistic. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Edward Snowden came out, you know, 15 years later and was like, boom, they're doing this.
Right.
Another interesting note, and take this all with a grain of salt, it's on Wikipedia, so anyone could have written it. But one of the directors at the time when the film came out said that he wanted to be more transparent because he made the judgment that we couldn't survive with the popular impression of this agency being formed by the last Will Smith movie. So they had to do a little bit of a PR control, you know, rebrand their effectiveness or rebrand what they're doing because people believe from the Will Smith movie, Enemy of the State, that that's what they're actually capable of. And so he needed to combat that.
And so later, he was worried about how nefarious they are or how efficient they are.
Well, the critic said that the efficiency portrayed in the film is unrealistic. And then the actual NSA director was like concerned about the light that the agency was put in by the film.
Mm.
And decided that they needed to do something about it. In 2006, a guy named James Risen wrote a book that said that the NSA director at the time was appalled by the film's depiction of the NSA and sought to counter it with a PR campaign on behalf of the agency.
Mm. All righty then.
Yes, I don't really know. Like, it seems to me that the media and Hollywood and politicians are all in collusion in some way. And so I am surprised, and we've said this before, that sometimes these libertarian ideas or maybe the mask gets uncovered in certain films in some ways, and I'm surprised that it slips through.
Right.
From time to time.
Yeah, I mean, either it shows like that the, you know, the CIA or national security apparatus or whatever you want to call it, that their influence isn't complete, or they don't want to make it too obvious. I know Jones has said, you know, that the CIA has had people on movie studio lots for decades. Exactly how much influence they have, hard to say. Exactly what they're doing, hard to say. But the mere fact that they're there doesn't exactly scream free artistic expression on the parts of movie studios.
Yeah. Oh, hey, we got a comment on the Facebook post in the Tom Woods group related to our current recording. And he says, he links the movie and he says, sometimes Hollywood accidentally goes libertarian. So yeah, he's making the point that we're making right now.
Sometimes they accidentally go libertarian. Yeah. Well, we've argued in the past that there are movies out there with libertarian messages, and they don't necessarily seem intentional. With movies like, say, Red Dawn, or maybe The Matrix. We can probably think of some others. I mean, there are situations
but at the same time,
like The Magnificent Seven, you know, self-defense type of situation movies.
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, a lot of those films can be viewed from so many different perspectives that everyone sees what they want to see. It's like a Rorschach test, you know?
Rorschach test.
What do you see in this? Yeah, what do you see in this in this ink smattering? Oh, I see what I want to see, you know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, especially like a movie that's as complex and deep as like The Matrix. When we did that episode, you can look at it from any number of angles. So I'm sure we're maybe finding things that were unintentional to the creators, but that's all art, you know. And even if you put something in intentionally, it's not necessarily seen. sometimes you put things that are in unintentionally. A lot of art just reflects the world that people see. So there are libertarian messages to be found in the world. And hopefully we are helping that out.
Yeah, indeed, sir. Hopefully we are. So you wanted to talk about another thing, and it's not necessarily related to this film, though if they were trying to slip a libertarian message in, they were taking a gamble and getting it in.
Yeah, so this is totally an aside, but locally here in the Washington state of Washington, the video game, well, they don't make video games anymore, but the video game platform maker Valve, which makes Steam, is facing criminal charges from the Washington State Gambling Commission over a to-do about their Counter-Strike game. And so there's been apparently a huge market in these Counter-Strike skins, which is a popular player versus player, first-person shooter, team-based objective game. And I don't really have a whole lot to say about it other than the state is constantly trying to, and they claim, to protect us from ourselves, saying that gambling is somehow wrong, when everybody gambles all the time, and it's only this weird little subset of gambling that for some reason the state says, well, this is bad, but every other time you do it, it's perfectly fine. So when you get married, that gamble is perfectly fine. When you start a business, that's a gamble, and it's perfectly fine. When you walk outside your house, that's a gamble, it's perfectly fine. But when you say put 50 down on red and you spin the wheel, that for some reason is bad and wrong and immoral and therefore is illegal. That's
but
the
you can go to the supermarket
state.
You can go to the supermarket and play your lucky numbers or get pull tabs or go into the Powerball lotto, and that's
or you could
somehow also, the morality of that's different,
or you could try out a new brand of cereal. You could gamble that way. Or yeah, but yeah, then there's legal gambling. So then the state, essentially, it's a monopoly where the government says, don't gamble in this way where we don't have a cut of it. Gamble with us where we can take the profits. So it's really hypocritical and disingenuous, and it's really obvious, in my view, that it's just a way to funnel gambling dollars into state coffers and out of other ways in which people choose to spend their money.
I've heard it said in some circles that gambling in the lotto and whatnot is like a tax on the stupid. It's like a stupid tax.
Right.
Because the odds of winning are
so
astronomical.
Right.
And essentially you're just giving the state money, like, somewhat voluntary basis, I mean, granted they're funneling it. Like if you wish to gamble, you have to gamble through them, like you said,
mm-hmm.
Monopoly. But at least it's better than stealing it from you,
Hey, if it was all funded by gambling, I wouldn't have a problem with it. If they didn't come around and steal from you.
There you go.
I would have issue with, what they do when they go out and attack and murder people that they call war, which is essentially mass murder. But if people voluntarily funded the state, you wouldn't necessarily call it the state. I mean, they wouldn't have the right to violently aggress against people, but it would be a step in the right direction, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that definitely would be, as far as the funding source being on a voluntary basis. It would be like a raffle. Like, hey, you want fire protection in this area? We're going to hold a raffle, and the winner is going to get half the money, and the fire department gets the other half. Now, the one problem with that is if they don't allow other competing fire departments or fire, fighting methods or the market to function, mm-hmm. but I could see it being a method of raising funds in a market-based, situation.
Sure, that's a tried-and-true thing all the time. And there are bake sales and yard sales and raffles held at all kinds of events. Perfectly fine, perfectly legitimate way to do it, and that's absolutely gambling. So it's just hypocritical and idiotic for the state to say, gambling right here is bad, gambling over here is good, when the exact same moral principle, you know, applies. It's adds to the insanity and nonsense that is the state, where there is absolutely no principle applied. It's just, we're trustworthy and we're good, so gamble with us. These other people are bad. You can't trust them. Never mind that trust is a market force. And if people don't trust gambling with a certain person, they won't do it. That was just my little bit on the insanity of the state gambling. And I wanted to thank all the entrepreneurs and all the people that got married, all those gamblers that are responsible for human civilization. You know, all the people that you know are famous are all gamblers, and they're all famous for gambling.
Yeah, well, like you said to me earlier, you step out your door, you're taking a gamble, you know?
Yeah.
You go out into the world, you're taking your gambles.
Yeah, and the people that risk more are, you know, they make that, we all make that cost-benefit calculation in our heads whenever we're making any kind of a decision. And the ones that have bet big and have succeeded are responsible for a lot of the benefits that we see today. I mean, all these private entrepreneurs, I mean, other than, you know, you're taking government money for things. I mean, people like Elon Musk, let's not talk about him so much, but, you know, in a market-driven economy, these entrepreneurs are gamblers, and they're responsible for all the abundance that surround you, and they're doing it for their own greed, and it's wonderful. And all the people that got married, they gambled on getting married to have children, to gamble to have kids, thank you very much. My parents, I appreciate it. I directly benefited from that all the way up the line of humanity. So I just wanted to say a shout out and thank you to all the gamblers out there. And yay gambling, because knowledge is not perfect, and it never will be. And it's why there's gambling. It's going to be a gamble until you're going to have perfect knowledge of a situation. If you know the outcome, it's not gambling. But since you don't always know the outcome, it is gambling.
And so would you say that betting on Hillary to win is not a gamble then?
Well, that's a fixed rigged game. you know what? I wonder what the odds are, what the actual Vegas odds that Hillary's going to get elected. It's got to be like 5-1. I don't know. It's probably something huge.
Huge.
I mean, 4-5 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't even know. But I don't know, man. I think this was a good show. So, enemy of the state, gambling, just general election talk. We know how to do it, you know. Pressure is on. We deliver. At least
we delivered some weird rambling episode. Hope you enjoyed it.
Aren't they all?
Yeah.
Well, hey, if you guys enjoy the show, be sure to reach out to us. We've got comments available. We've got Facebook. We've got email addresses. Like, comment, share. Let us know if you've got any feedback. Let us know if there's things that we should change up. Maybe some segments you'd like to see, more you'd want to hear about. We run readrothbard.com. We've got books, lectures, articles, this podcast, a bunch of other stuff at readrothbard.com. I've been Daniel and my friend Robert, and we bid you adieu.
Yeah, just to quickly reiterate what Daniel just said, without feedback, we just kind of do what we want, which is fine and great, but you absolutely have some influence, if you want it, over what kind of content you're going to hear on this show, because we would like to get some feedback on where you want to see the show go. That'd be fantastic. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, just to add to that, I will say that the whole reason that we're on Google Play and iTunes as of today is because we did get some feedback from some folks saying, hey, that podcast sounds like a really cool thing. Is it on here? And is it over here? And we're like, no, let's go figure that out. And so we did. So thank you guys for the feedback.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening. And have a great
thanks for
day.
Listening. Have a great day, great evening. And we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot, folks.
Peace out. The Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the Chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.